I'm John Batchelor, and this is the Friends of History Debating Society, podcast exclusive, welcoming a charter member of the Friends of History Debating Society, Michael Vlahos, who teaches history at Johns Hopkins. We're turning over a conversation we've had for some years now about what we see around us in the 21st century, and one way we observe this is taking our roles as Germanicus and Gaius in Londinium, 90 AD, philosophizing as we drink our cups of wine by the Thames. London is a burgeoning new town after we defeated the horrible Boudicca some 30 years ago. It has a berm, not a wall, but it's prosperous. It's a trading center, and Britain is the northernmost colony of the Roman Empire. Thank you very much. The empire is confident. It's expansive. There are 28 legions, and the emperor, Domitian, is semi-divine. We stay very far clear of him, and there's a reason for that, and we'll introduce it. We are equestrians, equus. That's what we're called. That means we're not senatorial class, and we're owners. We're good Roman citizens. With the right encouragement, we could be senatorial class, but we don't want to do that. We like living in London, Londinium. We like our colleagues. Romans live here, especially retired army officers like it here. It's cheaper. It's pleasant. The Britons, the conquered tribes, are very friendly. In the north, there's trouble. But that's not our concern. That's far away. We're in Londinium reflecting upon the events of these last centuries, and particularly the events of these last decades. When we were younger men, in 69 AD, there was tumult in the capital that led to what you'd have to say, revolution after revolution, and the introduction by the army into our affairs. The army was all powerful, and yet, following the suicide, if that's what it was, of Nero, the end of the dynasty, the Julian dynasty was dead. There was no replacement. There was an emptiness in the throne. And generals commanding the legions in the empire had ideas that they could move in and take the throne. There was nothing blocking them. There was no preparation for this. And that's the year of four emperors. The reason we care about it, the reason it matters to us, is that we're observing that when the military gets involved, when the military gets involved in constitutional affairs, the Roman Empire, no one is safe. And in the year of four emperors, there is simultaneously Vindex, who is the governor in what is now northern France, promotes his colleague, Galba. Galba fails, and promoting a senator, Otho. Otho fails, promoting a general, Vitellius. Vitellius fails, promoting a general, Vespasian. Vespasian will become the new head of the dynasty that is now in power. Vespasian's the Flavian dynasty. Now, all of this happens suddenly, and we hear about it at the edge of the empire, but that's the philosophical turn. Why does it worry us when the military gets involved? After all, they're confident men. They have the army, and the army's loyalty is everything to guard the empire. And the Vespasian finally wins because he is celebrated for his putting down the rebellion in Palestine, Judea, putting down the revolt of the Jews, and also being joined by the legions on the Rhine, our best legions, who marched on Rome in order to establish that Vespasian was emperor. Once he was named emperor, things settled down for a while. And there it is, Germanicus, that's what we're worried about, for a while. When the military gets involved, is there permanence? Good evening to you.
Good evening, Gaius. We're concerned, and we're old enough, as you say, as you note, to have lived through the year of the four emperors, 69, and we remember the unanticipated upheaval, and this brought home, in a kind, it's like a dagger to the heart, that the great father of the country, the father of the nation, Augustus, the god, had pulled a kind of a hat trick so that when the Republic, as it was once known, ended, the new Republic under Augustus was seen to have assumed and brought forward enough continuity that that continuity would remain in perpetuum. And in fact, that wasn't the case. What had happened is that the tumult at the end of the Republic was still a form of negotiation, if you will, through battle between Caesar and Pompey and the conspirators, et cetera, et cetera. It was still a form of negotiation between generals who had been and were senators, tribunes, and consuls. The army was still composed of citizens, as in the old days. But once Augustus had created a calm and stability after Actium, the new empire was ruled by a dynasty that was basically a family business. And the legions very quickly became professional forces composed of Spaniards, Isaurians, and Germans. And they were up on the Rhine. They were very far, far away from the center of the Roman world, which is the Mediterranean. And as a result, you had the emergence of a very powerful force that was suddenly called upon when the weakness of the new constitutional regime was made evident, and where its former strength was stripped away with the death of Nero, and suddenly there was no constitutional framework, no set of ritual protocols, and no deliberative body that had been invested with authority, the Roman Senate. The Roman Senate had been denatured politically under Augustus. It was still critical. Senators were the richest men, the most powerful men with the greatest standing. They were still necessary to undergird the regime, and they were still given their ritual governorships in Africa and Asia, et cetera. But they were in no position constitutionally to ensure a succession. They did not have the authority any longer. So who was going to ensure a succession? And nobody knew, but it very quickly became evident that it was going to be the army, the faraway army of veterans who were not Roman, of generals who were not consuls or senators. They might enlist a senator like Calpurnius Piso, who was enlisted by one of the four emperors in an attempt to ingratiate himself. But the fact is that the power brokers were now the army. All of them were military guys. And the fact is that everything was sorted out through a second civil war that really hearkened to the horrors of the first civil war at the end of the Republic, even though it was short. But what was put into place under the ultimate winners of this struggle, which was first Vespasian and 30 years later after Domitian was killed, Nerva, and then the five good emperors, is you had a run of a couple hundred years where the succession worked fairly smoothly, but always that succession was dependent upon the acquiescence and support and endorsement of the army. It also needed the support and endorsement of the Senate and the people, but the force guaranteeing legitimacy was the army. And in fact, for the next 1,000 years, all the way until the 13th century in Byzantium, that always the army was the absolute guarantor of legitimate succession.
These are the barracks rooms emperors, the barrack room emperors. And what I worry about, Germanicus, is that there's no going back once you turn to the barracks. The protocol is in place. The tradition says when in trouble, call upon the army because they're the guys with the sharp end of the stick. And they will be loyal, we think, to the idea of Rome, although that's not trustworthy. The year of four emperors taught us that the army has its own demands. And within the army are the specialists, the Praetorian Guard. And the Praetorian Guard can be ambitious to think that, well, we know, one of its members, one of its leaders, thought he could be emperor. So what we're dealing with here is the constitution is replaced by the sword, the man or the army with the strongest arms. Once does it ever go away, Germanicus?
Let's be clear here when talking about the state of the U.S. today. We have, in contrast to Rome, we have an explicit written constitution that has stood the test of time, albeit merely 200 years and change. But the fact is, there it is. But guess what? The legitimacy of the constitutional protocols to ensure orderly succession have been heavily undercut by Blue and its push to get rid of the Electoral College and to pack the Supreme Court. In other words, and also H.R. 1 to change the nature of voting. What that is doing is undercutting the final props in the legitimacy of elections and the orderly transfer of power.
I call you back in the time machine, Germanicus. I want to stay with 90 AD for a moment because we'll go to the 21st century. We can do that. Right now, I want one more concern. Once the army gets involved, what of the cults? In 90 AD, the four cults in town that worry me all the time, Gaius says a lot of worrying, are the Mithras cult, the army, the Isis cult, who knows what that is, but it's out of Egypt, the Sibyl cult, again, unclear but mysteries, and then Christianity, turn the other cheek. Those cults are undermining the authority of the might of Rome as well, even as the army marched in 69 AD. So how do those cults explain the empire's weakening? Were they a symptom of the weakening, or did they weaken the empire?
The cults, as you put it, really go hand in hand with the diffusion of power, which will eventually be the end of Rome, but also with the fact that the loss of the original Roman constitution and the cohesion of what had been for centuries a city-state identity and constitutional polity is now replaced by a set of new identities, new loci, as it were, new centers of power. And the military goes hand in hand with those centers. In fact, the new forces that are emerging in Rome in the early second century are very much reliant on the cults. For example, the Mithras cult has its locus in the army. Right. And suddenly Mithras is critical to Rome's political stability. ISIS has made its way throughout all sorts of segments of, as it were, feminine Roman society, and it is critical. The other mystery cults and even Christianity have become now a kind of set of competing successor belief systems for what had been a unitary Roman civil political religion. But that religion becomes thinner and more brittle and more of a kind of crust over the mix of the Roman Empire, which is now huge. It's a world-spanning realm. And the Roman religion is no longer the religion of the old city-state. So you're having a very powerful transition. And this is so easily and so necessarily to be compared with the United States.
All right, let's get in our time machine and go to the 21st century, because this is the Friends of the History Debating Society, and Germanicus and Gaius, Michael, his Christian name, you can tell which cult wins, and John. We're starting in Rome 2,000 years ago. That is the author of the Civil War that we now talk about routinely in this country. And it is also the author of Violent Succession of the Principate, the ruler, the emperor. And our concern is that we're seeing similarities here in the 21st century. Or are we? I'm John Batchelor.